Welcome to the Alcohol Addiction Podcast. My name is Lee Davey. I am not an alcoholic. I refuse to be anonymous. I am someone that doesn't drink alcohol. I spend every waking moment of my life helping other people do the same, including right now. We're going to be talking with Nick Littlehales in a little bit. But before we talk about Nick, let's do some housekeeping, as Sam Harris always says on his wonderful podcast. Strive and the Truth About Alcohol is changing. If you've been over to www.thetruthaboutalcohol.co.uk recently, you'll see that the website's changed a bit. And from September the 1st, we're moving forward on a monthly subscription basis, okay? It is £40 a month, which is a couple of beers on a Saturday night. But why are we moving to a £40 a month subscription service? For those of you that don't know, we used to have a £5 a month subscription for Strive. Why even charge people in the first place? Well, I think that it's important that if people want to become people that don't drink alcohol, that, you know, we try to get them as committed as possible. And I know it sounds really silly, but even just putting your credit card details over to pay £5 a month really does mean that you're taking it more seriously than you are if you just soak up all the stuff that is released for free out there. And, you know, at the same time as well, I'm trying to turn The Truth About Alcohol into a business as well as a family, because I want to do this full time. And I think that if I do this full time, I'll be able to help more people, et cetera, right? So that's where the charge comes in. We had two main products. We had the taster, which would help people quit alcohol for a month to just, you know, have a little kind of insight into The Truth About Alcohol philosophy. And we charged people £100 for that. And then after you took the taster, you could then continue your journey for another year working on the intensive, and that was £1,000. And what happened was, the people who took the taster and the intensive and went on to be people who don't drink alcohol, and a lot of them actually became Strive ambassadors and started helping people and running courses themselves. There was few and far between people taking these experiences. The feedback on that was varied. A lot of it to do with trust issues. A lot of it to do with money, a lot of it to do with finances. You know, people saying, I can't afford £1,000 to take the intensive, or I can't afford £100 to do the taster. So what I decided to do, because I know that this content is so rich, is so effective, is I decided to create a monthly subscription service of £40 a month. So you get access to Strive, you get access to the taster, and you get access to the intensive. And if you don't like it, you can stop at any time that you want to stop. And that way, I'm hoping that more people are willing to take the punt on £40 a month. Because like I say, you know, £40 a month is, what, two bottles of wine or something like that, which, you know, a lot of us are drinking like in a night. So it's not a lot of money. And if you don't like it, you just cancel your subscription. So that's what we're doing from September the 1st. So if you want to join us and get involved, what you can expect is, as I said, access to the forum, access to all the wonderful people on there, access to the taster and the intensive coaching videos. There's over 100 coaching videos. You get personal access to myself and our ambassador team, which is really strong, really effective. And also moving forward, we're going to try to bring our counseling in-house. A lot of people leave Strive to go to have counseling elsewhere. Well, we want to bring those in-house. We want to try to do that in-house. And we also want to contact other people who we think jive with our philosophy and who we believe have the time and the capability to actually create courses and to create videos and to do work, you know, for Strive. So if I want to create a video series on how to get better sleep after you stop drinking alcohol, well, maybe I can pay Nick Littlehales to do that instead, who's going to be our guest today. If I want to create a little training course on codependency, which is really important in addiction, maybe I don't want to do that. Maybe I should hire Melody Beattie to do one instead. And all that means that we need to raise funds so we can pay people to do that kind of stuff. So that's why we're moving forward with the new model. If you want to join, head to www.thetruthaboutalcohol.co.uk. You will not be wasting your money, okay? If you think about how much money you waste drinking alcohol and all the shit that comes around it, £40 a month is nothing when it comes to putting what I believe being someone that doesn't drink alcohol should be the most important thing in your life. Okay, so that is going ahead September the 1st. Head to the website to join that. Right, on to our guest, Nick Littlehales. Nick started out in life as an area rep for Slumberland, which, if you are not familiar in the UK, is a bed company. You know, you sell beds to people. And over a period of time working for Slumberland, he decided he wanted a bit more out of life because Nick's a bit of a get-up-and-goer. And he contacted Sir Alex Ferguson at Manchester United and said, "Hey, what are you doing about sleep preparation with your players?" And Sir Alex said, "Nothing." So Nick suddenly found himself working with Manchester United at the pump, you know, in the late 90s. He also got working with the British cycling team, and he's worked with many sporting and business factions all around the world, giving them help and guidance on how to get better sleep, better quality sleep. And in 2016, he released his first book, which is called Sleep. And I first heard about the book when he appeared on the One Year No Beer podcast talking to Andy Ramage. Bought the book, thought it was fantastic. And his technique is called the R90 technique. And I was fortunate enough to fill in a questionnaire and for him to give me a sleep plan. And you're going to hear about that in the following podcast. But I've been actually following his R90 plan for a couple of weeks now. And so I can share a little bit about it with you. So basically what's happening with me in the moment is I'm going to bed at 3:30 in the morning. Okay. And I'm waking up at 8 o'clock in the morning. Then I am spending some time with my daughter until about 11. And then my wife takes over the childcare responsibilities. And then I work until 5:30 in the afternoon. Then I have another 90 minutes sleep until 7. Then I have dinner with my family. And then either me or my wife will put my daughter to bed. And then I work or make babies with my wife until 3:30 in the morning. And I do that every day. Oh, and I have a 30-minute meditation in there in the evening as well. What has happened since I've been doing that, I have been a little bit tireder, so a little bit more tired. So I have to make sure that I slip some 90-minute recoveries or some 30-minute recoveries in when I can. And my wife's fully on board with it, so that's really important as well. But what I found is I'm actually able to spend so much more time with my family, and also it seems more time working. And that conflict that I used to have around feeling shame and guilt about spending too much time working, it doesn't happen anymore. And the conflict issues that I have with my wife Liza around me not connecting with her and not being the man that she needs and she wants and she desires, that's improving as well, because I'm able to spend much more quality time with my family, safe in the knowledge that, hey, they're going to go to bed in a bit and I'm going to be like working from, like my wife will take Zia to bed today and I'll be there working from like 10 o'clock until 2:30 in the morning. Another thing to add is I go to bed at 3:30, so I turn all technology off at 2. So between 2 and 3:30, I'll read some paper books, I'll clean up the house, that kind of stuff, you know, just to kind of wind down. And the first 90 minutes when I wake up in the morning, no technology as well. Also, trying to get a lot more light exposure. Nick introduced me to that, and you'll hear that on the podcast. So far, so good. I strongly suggest when you listen to this that you take some action. All right, you take some action. If you're a member of Strive, by the way, and you join that subscription I talked about, then you can get some money off Nick's products. And I really do suggest you do it. This is a game changer for me. You know, I knew it when I was talking to him on a podcast. I was like, fucking hell, this is not just going to give me improved sleep. This is going to improve my relationships with my family. And it has done that. So without further ado, I'm going to shut the hell up and leave you in the capable hands of the sleep coach, Nick Littlehales. How's life, Nick? Welcome to the Alcohol Addiction Podcast. You doing all right?
I'm doing very well. It's a lovely warm day here today, so it's a bit stuffy, but I won't complain about that.
Yeah, I'm off to a festival tomorrow with my three-year-old in Salisbury, and I believe it's going to piss down with rain, looking typical.
Yeah. You know? Good festival stuff, though, isn't it?
We're going to start off with an icebreaker.
Oh, okay.
But so I've got some cards here.
Yeah.
Quite a lot of them.
Okay.
I'm going to randomly ask you a question. If you don't want to answer it, just say fold.
Okay.
I'll pick another one. Make a list of some people who really bug you. Who really bugs you, Nick?
A list.
Or just give us one or two.
I think it would... it's not everybody, but I think we're probably all in a little bit of the same boat. I just probably think Mr. Trump. I think.
Yeah, he doesn't bug me so much. I don't really pay much attention to him. But
well, no, I don't mean to say he doesn't sort of, you know, get it. But it's sort of like, I think just politics in general. Just you just think, oh, you know, all the Brexit stuff, politicians, leaders. You just think, oh dear, I just want to ignore them rather than get involved. You know, so I think I'm more bugged by their. It's almost sort of like nonsense stuff that goes on, which bugs me a little bit because, you know, I've got grandchildren, you've got children. You just think, well, it's difficult enough for this new generation to what they're faced with in the future. Lots of positive things and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, they've got some challenges ahead, haven't they? And you just think, oh, they're just making it worse. But anyway,
I find myself in a tough spot, actually, because I was never raised in a political environment. So nobody, the only politics I knew was my mum and dad sitting in front of the budget, hoping the price of fags and alcohol didn't go up, you know?
Well, I'm a bit like that. I think religion and politics was not part of my upbringing. Mm, mm. So you basically just went, let them get on with it. Whether the red or the blues are in, it doesn't really have too much of an effect on us.
Yeah.
As long as they all seem to be making good decisions or right decisions or whatever, just let them all get on with it because it's a different world.
Mm.
But it just seems to have, gone crackers. And I think even for people like us who don't really get involved with it, or you know, you let them get on with it, you just keep reading all the time that he just goes, oh, goodness me. Ugh.
I think my dilemma now, I speak to my wife about this a lot, is even though I grew up not paying much attention to politics, I don't think it's done me any harm. It's probably done me more good. But I don't want my kid growing up not understanding politics. So I guess at some point I got to pull my finger out of my ass and get into it so I can teach my little one. I got a three-year-old and an 18-year-old. The 18-year-old thinks the left wing is Ryan Giggs and the right wing is David Beckham. But the three-year-old, I want to get her to know a little bit more about it. So,
yeah. All right. Good luck with that one.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I completed your R90 questionnaire. Well, first of all, let me just explain how I found about you. I listened to you on Andy Ramage's 1 Year No Beer podcast. Okay. Thought it was fantastic. Really into it because I'm a Man United fan as well, because I know you work with them. And then I bought the book Sleep, read it, tried to implement a bit of it, and then kind of gave up, if I'm being honest with you. Let the three-year-old dominate me.
Yeah.
Completed your R90 questionnaire, and I've got that back to me now, and we'll talk about that a little bit. Now, you've put some, just for people who are listening to this, what is the R90 questionnaire? What is the R90 program?
Been in the industry all of my life. I wanted to be... you know, sport was my thing at school. I got to certain levels in certain things. So I've got a little bit of sport, personal endeavor, make it happen for yourself type of, I don't know, characteristic. I ended up in the world of sleep. I started off as a very sort of, you know, just trying to pay the mortgage for a young family as a sales representative on the road for a big sleeping company. I graduated up, and over those years, I've done a lot of things. And 22 years ago, I stepped out of that particular area and fell into the world of sport. So I've always been in sleep, but then I started having dialogue in sport. And over the 22 years, as things have been quite dramatically changing, to be honest, Lee, you know, we've gone from no phone to where we are today. Working inside of sport, there was always these sort of challenges cropping up. So it was all about mental and physical recovery. It was always, you know, focused around sleep or the ability to recover and the ability to get from A to B in every day or any period with all the increasing challenges of this 24/7 multimedia world we're in. So what happened was, it was, I was always looking at certain areas, and what that was about education, because sleep's always been taken for granted. So we don't talk about it at school, parents don't pass it on. So that's that. So started to find out that I needed to educate people. I needed to make them more aware of certain critical factors. I needed to redefine their approach, because when you mention sleep to somebody, they kind of switch off. So very difficult to engage athletes if you don't sort of put it in a different context. So what it basically is there were seven areas that were constant, and a bit sort of like the aggregation of marginal gains is if you could make a little change in these seven areas, then that would aggregate up to an overall improvement. And whilst that's become a little bit more significant in the modern world with people like British Cycling, the aggregation of marginal gains and business, that 1% factor, I didn't actually come at it like that. It just sort of molded into that era. So it basically is, the focus is on trying to change somebody's perspective around, you know, get your 8 hours at night. And I just met so many people where they got schedules, night shift workers, nurses, doctors, athletes. It just thought that could not apply. So I used something that I'd learned about, which was sleeping in a polyphasic manner, which is shorter periods more often. I also knew that we would measure sleep in 90-minute periods inside a clinic. Five 90-minute cycles equals 7.5 hours. There's your eight. So if I could change their approach to, say, sleeping in cycles, sleeping in, you know, using this sort of 90-minute thing nocturnally and during the day, then maybe I can just change their perspective on what this is about. So rather than thinking about sleep, thinking about recovery. So that's at the core of it. So R90 means recovery in 90-minute cycles. The R90 technique is seven KSRIs. They're key sleep recovery indicators. Number one is circadian rhythms, your knowledge of that. Number two is chronotypes. Number three is sleeping in cycles rather than hours. Number four is pre and post, what we do, particularly post-sleep and pre-sleep. There is also a balance between activity and recovery, which is so easy to say, but you have to try and find a way for somebody to achieve that. And then we've got environments where we choose to recover and sleep, and also the products that we choose to use when we're trying to sleep and recover. So those are the seven areas. That's the technique. And if you wander through with the profile questionnaire, it simply tells me all the little things about you in those particular areas. And so then we can pick out from there where your little marginal aggregating gains would be, and you can start redefining your approach tomorrow with what's really important is practical and achievable things, not things you've got to make too much investment in. They're just everyday natural things that you can just adopt. And because, as you pointed out before, there's so many variables every day in life and with other people who influence how your day is going to appear with your child, with other people, is that you just have to have something in your toolkit, in your back pocket, that just goes, this is how I do it. This is how I can adapt. This is how I can roll. This is how I can stop worrying about it. And this is just a little sort of set of techniques that sort of helps me along that route. And that's what it's all about.
The best time I the most comfortable I ever remember being, I worked as a supervisor on the railway for many years, and I always loved the night shift. I hated the morning shift, right? Yeah. And then when I met Liza, my wife, and we had no kids, we would stay awake till 4 o'clock in the morning. Like a button, you know, and then we'd go to sleep and we'd wake up at 10, maybe 11 o'clock. And I always felt really rested. Yeah. But the rest of the world never worked like that. No. But it was perfect for me. But you know, it's like one of the challenges I have, I guess, just before we go on to my thing is, if I was single, then I think I would find this a lot easier. But my wife just walked in the door and I said, oh, I've had my questionnaire back from Nick. You know, he's suggesting I should sleep 4.5 hours a night, you know, and then get the other cycle in the afternoon. And she just went, that's nonsense. You can't have 4.5 hours sleep in the night. You've got to have 8 hours.
Yeah.
That's what you're up against, right?
But then you reminded her that that's what she used to do.
I did. I said, do you remember when we used to, you know, but I guess the complication for me, and I thought this a little bit when I listened to you talk to Andy, and I think it's why I gave up, is I suffer from a lot of shame and guilt around an old divorce and not being in and around my boy and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's there with everything. I'm doing some therapy to get rid of it. But to say to Liza, this is how I want to structure my sleeping schedule, that shame and guilt comes up for me. So that's going to be my biggest challenge. Yeah. I think the best thing, Nick, is to say, hey, Liza, you should do this as well. And together as a family, we figure out how we can get best do our sleep cycles.
Absolutely. Because there's quite a number of things. That's why, you know, when people just try and go into the area of sleep, you know, when they get to a point where sleep is a real problem, because for most, you know, for the majority, we just try and sleep at night. We wake up, we get on with our day, we get on, we do everything we want to do and then try and do it again. It's not a performance criteria. It doesn't dictate our days. So even when your wife says, you've got to get your 8 hours. Well, when did she sleep 8 hours all the way through consistently for 7 days, right?
Never.
So it's sort of like, there's that thing in your head. So people start to look for interventions in isolation, right? And they might go to over caffeine. They might go to, you know, instead of a social glass of wine between two humans having a chat and a little bit of a break, it turns into 2, 3, 4 as a soporific and a sedative and to get rid of worries and things like that. But it creates the opposite, as you fully well know. So, or they try to, you know, maybe get some eye masks, that might help. They get a this, that might help. Go to the pharmacy and get some herbal supplements, that might help. Or even to the point of sleeping tablets and stuff like that. So when you start to look at it like that, it's a far more natural process, and there are so many variables. And you do sometimes, your particular thing is not uncommon because, you know, it's not specifically scientifically researched, but I've read a lot about it and I've done a lot of personal research with some large organizations and groups of people in all sorts of walks of life. And you can pretty much say that maybe 60-70% of the population are like you, right? They're more PM orientated, nighttime characteristics than the AMers. And yet we've always sort of driven ourselves to be an AM culture. Now, that's principally probably driven by the sun rising and us humans having to be active while it's light, you know, the hunter-gatherer type thing. But there's no understanding or compensation for the fact that quite a large percentage of any group or any family or any organization are more like you, who would like to start work at 11 o'clock in the morning. So it's not like you want to do less, but you would always like to do some things that where you would be more productive maybe at 2 o'clock in the morning, you know,
yeah,
rather than 10 o'clock in the morning. So I think there's that little bit as well. We've been developing and technology and knowledge and the things that we can access now, and we're changing things all the time. And we've got a different world, you know. So we've been doing a lot of these things, but I think now is the time to also reflect on something else we need to change. And that is, you know, when are we going to get rid of daylight saving time? You know, we did not create this for a benefit to the human being. So not every country still adopts it. And just get rid of it, right? You'd think of, you know, take more notice that there's more people with this natural chronotype. So you could be more productive. You could have a better relationships with other people if you just recognize this and made some changes. So I think all it is at this moment in time is, just like you, is that maybe you get to the point as an organization called, you know, Lee's Family, and you sit down and go, my daughter's this, you're that, I'm this, this is how we roll. We've got some things, you know, you're freelance, which means you can, you could take advantage of that.
Yeah.
So whilst it's sort of, yes, you can fall asleep quite easily because you're a PMer being woken up in the morning, and you can fall asleep quite easily during the day for maybe 1 or 2 hours because, you know, you haven't got it there. So maybe you just structure it to suit your little family organization and try and deal with the outside influences as best you can. So we're going through a period of change, and it's not just going to flick a switch tomorrow, but it's really great that more people are talking about it, raising that awareness, raising their knowledge about certain things. And certainly, you know, people have to work hectic, change, ever-changing schedules. Is that, you know, if certain these things that they're learning protects them from some of those very sort of addictive behavioral things, then that's all good.
What I think why I was drawn to you, Nick, and your work is the work that we do at Strive to help people not drink alcohol. We're in the minority thinking. So we exist in a world where every fucker drinks alcohol, right?
Yeah.
Which is similar to you existing in the same world. Everybody thinks they need to sleep 8 hours a night. And yeah. I like the way that you said, hang on a minute. Let's break this down. Let's start from a fresh slate and see what really works. Not be stuck and tied to, how can we work around this 8 hours a night and make it better? You didn't. You smashed it apart and you started from scratch. And I see that methodology, that mindset, I want to encourage that in our Strivers, because you get people who say, for example, they stop drinking, but their husband hasn't stopped drinking. He's still drinking, right? So they still go to the pub with him or whatever. So then they start thinking, how can I stop drinking while I'm still going to pub with this guy? So it's like, they're not, it's not like
get rid of thinking. Him. Get rid of him. Stop drinking.
Right. Well, so you would say to yourself, wouldn't you, Nick, what's the type of guy I need in my life? What values? What environments do I want in my life? You wouldn't start from the point of I need to be in the pub, or and you wouldn't start from the point of, well, I need 8 hours sleep a night. So let's start there. When I did my questionnaire, you come back and said to me, Lee, I think you could do a couple of, was it three cycles in the night, 4.5 hours, and then a cycle late afternoon. Explain why cycles for me, what times you're suggesting I should sleep.
Well, I gave you what you basically start from. I gave you a little infograph, which is you sort of, first of all, if you tap it in your browser, learn about circadian rhythms. And we realize that we've got brains and bodily functions that are completely synchronized to this process. The sun wandering around our planet and the light talk and temperature shift, and nothing's changed, right? Mm-hmm. Everything else has, but that hasn't. So you're called Lee, but it's a brain and bodily functions, okay? So the first thing you do is you can use little tests and everything else, but pretty much everybody I meet, once you mention chronotype, once you mention nighttime owl, once you mention certain things, you know, if you had full control, they basically go, I'm one of those.
Mm.
So you don't, it's not sort of, you don't have to do some sort of test to evaluate it. We kind of feel it, but it gets camouflaged with other things. So when you get that natural chronotype wake time, so it's not the sunrise, it's not occupation, it's just, when would Lee, in complete control of everything, sort of naturally wake and feel hungry, because that's what breakfast is. So Lee doesn't naturally wake at 6 o'clock in the morning or 5 o'clock in the morning.
Nope.
Lee probably doesn't wake naturally at 7 o'clock or 7:30. You know, could it be 10 o'clock? Well, Yes, as if he pushes it too hard the night before, stays up too late, then yes. But in the scheme of things, maybe 8 o'clock is a period of time, you know. It's a time. It could be 8:30, it could be 8:26, but we still go 8 o'clock or 8:30. On the hour or off the hour, half hour, kind of makes it very simple for me to think about subconsciously.
Can I just say there, Nick, I do get up at 8 o'clock every morning.
There you go. So we picked 8 o'clock because you're actually, you know, self-employed, freelance, whatever. So you can naturally wake when you want to. Obviously, you've got children, you've got a child and you've got a wife that sort of impacts on it. But we chose 8 o'clock as being your sort of comfortable wake time.
Yeah.
Now, sometimes you might choose to change your job, change your partner, have another kid, change your occupation, where you might have to get up earlier. But what we've said is that's probably your more natural wake time.
Hmm.
Yeah. So then you chop your day up into 90-minute cycles. So you get 16 segments, 16 slots. So your first 90 minutes of the day is between 8 and 9:30, right? So very easily, you can just have in your head that you naturally wake about 8 and off you start your day. The first 90 minutes is this. The second 90 minutes is that. Then you hit midday. Then you hit there. Then you hit there. Then you hit there. So all I did is by taking what you have clearly is a nighttime chronotype. That means your relationship with the sunrise process is different to mine because I'm a morning chronotype, right? And that's all about the hormone serotonin and blue light and how that's all triggered because we used to sleep outside.
Mm.
So your particular day, it would be much better for you because looking through some of the things that, you know, it's common to a lot of people. You know, some people call them regrets or things that have happened that you always consciously look back on, you know, in your memory almost every day, isn't it? Of, you know, the what ifs and that. And you try to go back through all of these things and they can create anxiety and they can change your mood and they can create depression and they can create difficult times for yourself. It's very difficult to get rid of them.
Mm.
You know, I've been to a counselor quite a number of years ago. It takes a great step to make that point, you know, yeah. But basically in all the talk around it, there's something there from my past, which is always going to be there. But I have to find a way of knowing it's already there. It will always be there. And how to either ignore it or deal with it or treat it. You know, so when you start looking at those things, you sort of think, I need to take advantage of my natural rhythm.
Mm.
And my natural rhythm would be to be awake, being reactive, which is into the later night, rather than trying to force yourself to sleep earlier. So I kind of thought that if you targeted at least, or started to redefine your everyday approach. So say from 8 o'clock, you wander back to 6:30. You wander back to 5 and you wander back to 3:30, going backwards in that segment. So sort of between 3:30 and 8 o'clock, there's 3 cycles in 4.5 hours, right? Now you're likely, if you take advantage of your day, is when you try and sleep with that, it's a bit more natural for you to be doing that because we're exposing the area where you like to be.
Mm.
It means you'll probably roll through those 3 cycles of 4.5 hours to 8 o'clock with no disturbances, not waking up to go to the toilet, not getting disturbed, getting too hot and all that sort of stuff, because it's a slightly shorter period, but it's defined into your natural wake time. But it's also, you've been happier running into that period because you've been awake doing stuff because you like that sort of thing.
Mm.
So when you wake at 8, you then look at, because you can have some control, is rather than you thinking, I'm going to the coffee shop and staying there all day long and leaving at 5:30 like all the AMers do and the 9-to-5ers do and all sorts of things. So well, actually, maybe there are some commitments around your child important. But principally, could we not get the fourth and fifth cycle late afternoon into early evening before you have to start doing family stuff and stuff like that? Maybe rather than staying at the coffee shop and working, right, which there's a lot in there, is actually by working between 8 and through to a particular point. Then you do one cycle, so we're up to 4 now, yeah? So we're up to 4 cycles. We'll get round to your wife's comment in a minute. So we're up to 4 cycles in 6 hours now, okay? By 90 minutes, late afternoon, right? Because you know you can fall asleep then. And it's just that moment, rather than staying at work, you take that moment out. Then you're able to enjoy your evening with your family, with your child, because they want bath time and all that sort of stuff, and eating and everything else. And then you might think, because I know you like to meditate and stretch, and you're a vegan, you're out of that sort of space. So maybe there's a CRP, a 30-minute cycle, a shorter one. Maybe that's, you know, your child's going to go to bed at some point, and I know there's other dynamics, but we've got to gloss around that a little bit. But maybe there's a 30-minute vacant mind space for you at some point later on that evening or night, where you're able to just go and meditate or go and do something on your own. So we class that as a cycle. That would just help you then roll on to 3:30. Yeah. And so the sort of harmony that comes in is that you're able to use that so that maybe where you lose whatever you're doing in the late afternoon, in the coffee shop, on the computer, doing stuff, maybe what you think you lose there, you will gain in other places and be more productive, write better, be more creative, not miss time scales, do things in a better way. So you're not losing work time, you're developing it for another hour. So what you might do late afternoon, if you did that at 1 o'clock in the morning, it would be better, quicker, faster, and you'd be more proud of it, right? So that's what you try to do is like you said before, which is a great way to look. It's just, if you just put yourself back there, if I was in complete control, which you,
pretty much am.
And then you sort of go, right, I'm bringing my child into that now. Okay. Well, if I'm bringing my child back in, then there's her routines. And those pretty much dominate. But actually, I can see where we can sort of jigsaw those two things together a little bit. So whilst I'm trying to sleep at night with my child, and she wakes up here and does this and does that, but if I'm not actually trying to sleep with her, then that reduces that down, right? Can I see her chronotype coming through yet? Because once you're aware of it, I know it's still in the very early formative layers, but there are little signs, even in that early stage. There are little signs about your child. So you might be able to say, it looks like she might be an AMer, right?
Yeah.
Or there's certain little things might suggest she's a bit of a PMer. So you sort of look at that and go, I'll just make a slight adjustment. Then you put your wife in, because your child comes first with that one, because they have specific things they need to do. Then you put your wife in there. And if she's an AMer and likes to rise at 5 o'clock in the morning and likes to go to bed at 9 o'clock at night, then you sit down and say, get rid. Right? Because me and my daughter can't cope with that. But then you're sort of a kind of...
You're lucky she's a PMer.
There she is. So she's a PMer. So, and I don't know what occupation she does. We haven't touched on
she's
that.
She's a mum at the moment.
So she's a mum. So look, you just go, hey, mum, if you can look after our daughter, see ya. If you can, if we just look at that together and go, this is what I'm going to do. And then that means I can do that with Sia there, where you could do that for yourself. I can do that for me here, so you could do that. So we just balance it all out between it. And then you've got this lovely space when Sia's asleep. And you two are at your best.
And making more Zias.
And making more Zias.
Nick, can I just say something, right?
So that's what it was about. And you're in a fortunate position. And I don't want to mean this, anybody's listening to this or any, you know, now or whenever they go, well, that's fine for, you know, that lot. But I've got a 9-to-5 job and I work shifts. It's exactly the same principle. You just bring it back to the, those basics. You sit there and look at it. And then you start to see where those negative things are going on. And you can start to minimize them or take advantage of them.
Yeah. Please don't listen to this and think it's okay for Lee. Because if you think about it, with my natural waking time of 8 o'clock, I could pretty much do any job. I live in Cardiff. I could pretty much do any job in Cardiff city centre, right? Because they're all in the office around 8:30, 9 o'clock. So don't have that mindset.
No.
What Nick is explaining here, as he just explained it to me, and he sent me the profile this morning, I just want to explain to you how powerful this is as it's developing in my mind, right? If you think about it, one of the reasons that we're all drinking alcohol, right, on Strive, is because we've got a lot of stress and anxiety in our life. And a lot of that is to do with how we're failing to communicate or interact and develop deep connective relationships with the people around us, right? And I'm no different, you know? Liza is seeing a therapist, I'm seeing a therapist. We've been clashing a lot lately, okay? And then one of the reasons that me and Liza have been clashing a lot lately is parenting of Zia. Whose responsibility is it to take care of Zia, right? Well, at the moment, it's Liza's. But what's it like, really, to give up your life to look after a three-year-old, to spend that much time with a three-year-old while I'm working, right? And what is it like when I'm working, trying to earn all the money, et cetera, et cetera? And then there's all this tension, okay? Mm. Now, think about what Nick is saying here now. If I could actually go to bed at 3:30 in the morning and wake up at 8 o'clock, I tell you what, I would sleep with my daughter. Right. What happens now is I go to bed at 12. All right. And I don't sleep with my daughter. I sleep with my wife. And then my daughter will wake me up at 1, 2, and then I'll crawl in the bed with her. Right. If I go to bed at 3:30, that girl is not going to wake up until 8 o'clock, and she will wake up at 8 o'clock like a button. And I'm going to wake up at 8 o'clock like a button. Now, my wife, okay, I know she'd love to go to bed at 3, 4 o'clock as well. But she will stay in bed after 8. That's what she likes to do. She'd get up more 9, 10 o'clock. Well, now I can take care of Zia for 2 hours in the morning while she has a lie on. Isn't that good news for Liza? I think that's great. Now, if we can then also incorporate this 90-minute spell in the afternoon, Nick doesn't know this, I don't think I put it on my questionnaire. I suffer from hypothyroidism, right?
Yeah, I've got it on there.
So I actually fall apart in the afternoon and really need to sleep. Yeah. So to get that 90 minute in is absolutely major for me. The amount of work that I would be able to do in the evening while Liza and Zia are asleep is incredible, because it's not clashing. Liza wants me to be, like, our challenge here, Nick, would be the 90 minute cycle around between 3:30, 6:30. We'd have to make that work around a dinner time kind of schedule so we're together as a family. That's the only thing I can think. But if we make this work as a family, and we're getting all that sleep time in, and we're balancing our schedules so we're more harmonious, there's less strife. So there's less potential that you're going to be drinking alcohol, right?
Yeah.
I think it's fucking genius.
Yeah.
You know?
That's the key thing, what you just said, is that you just have to work around that bit. And the thing is not to get to a point where, you know, when it gets too much and the brain takes over, then at some point one day, maybe on a day off or a weekend or whatever, you'll get to mid-afternoon and crash and fall asleep for 2 hours on the sofa or a bed, right?
Mm.
Maybe 1, 2, 3 hours, right? What we're saying is you make this part of it, right? And between that period, because you've got your daughter's evening meal, family evening meal, whatever, so you look at your working day and you find where that spot is, and I'm only going to do this for 90 minutes maximum. I'm not just going to, I'm not going to sleep to roll it on. I do it for 90 minutes there so I can then do that, enjoy the evening with the family, be more productive around your daughter and your wife and vice versa. And then you've got other things to, and you're not worrying about things that are happening tomorrow because you're not working. You've got that lovely opportunity that when that evening process has come together, you can catch up.
Mm.
Like, you can do that article. You can do that research. And it makes it even more relevant when you start shifting through the seasons with this daylight saving time shift, because suddenly the back end of your day is full of sunlight and let's go outside and be active, right? Till quite late at night, 10, 11 o'clock, still sunny and warm. And then suddenly you shift into, before you even left the coffee shop, it's dark and cold, right? At 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah.
So it really helps that when you've got those things in place, that as you do shift to a season, you realize how important that 90 minutes is, because you've also got the impact of the lack of exposure to normal light and seasonal affective disorders coming on. We stop eating salads and smoothies and going on picnics and riding bikes, and we suddenly get, it's cold, it's horrible, it's dark, there's no space, social time gets reduced. And that's another area. I know it's all, you know, your field, but that's another area where you see people, instead of going out and being active and exercising and hydrating and eating healthy foods, suddenly it's like we go straight to the pub. Do you know what I mean? It's just, they become isolated, they become insulated, and they go home and they just want to, oh, it's dark and I don't want to go and see any friends. Yeah. And all of those things is just like, well, look, maybe this is never going to change. But don't just let it come around every year like this, because it's coming. So what can we do to manage this process better? And don't let this period get on top of us like that, because it's just getting worse for a lot more people because of the other pressures. And that's where I think it works for you as a group, is as you get, as you wander, you know, through, see, August towards September, you can start making other little practical steps to prepare yourself from the shift of light.
You wouldn't believe how many people struggle with alcohol issues and relate it to seasonal, what is it, seasonal affective disorder or something.
They call it seasonal affective disorder. And it literally is the shift in exposure to daylight and exercise and social behavior, but it's principally the relationship with light exposure that does it.
The other thing I like about this is we, in our programs, when we're helping people to give up drinking alcohol, one of the problems that we're trying to tackle here is people who invariably have drinking issues, they're kind of switched off to life a little bit. So not really doing anything, so they get bored and they think that drinking fills up the boredom. So we try to get them, Nick, to start looking at the calendar and actually scheduling everything they're doing every day, right? So they can see how much work they're doing on the things that really matter, you know, really having a kind of analytical approach. And what I did almost immediately after reading the sleep book is I started to break my day up into 90-minute cycles. So I write as a freelancer. So I will write for 90 minutes and then I will get up and go for a walk. So I'm in Starbucks, say, then I'll get up and go for a walk. Absolutely. And then I'll come back after 10, 15 minutes and I'll write for another 90 minutes. So I like your approach, not just the 90 minute cycles when we're sleeping, but what am I going to do now between 8 and 9:30? What am I going to do between 9:30 and 11? And if you think about that approach from more of a corporation Davy family, then you can start swapping and changing these 90-minute cycles. You can start saying, well, you know, I actually need X amount of cycles to get this work done. You want X amount of cycles with me to be with you and Zia. Let's negotiate where they're going to be, you know?
There you go. You're redefining my technique as we speak. But that's exactly right. It's not a science. It's not another routine you've got to stick to. It's just the principles of it. Is that you can just use this subconscious approach. And it really is important because I think, you know, like a lot of things, it's about mental and physical activities, Lee, right? What we, you know, you chose to be a vegan, right? You weren't born a vegan. So you choose to be a vegan. You choose to be gluten-free or to be vegetarian or whatever it is, right? So it's a mental and physical activity, isn't it? Your nutritional plan, your hydration plan, and your exercise plan, whether it's walking the dog, for 30 minutes, or whether it's going to the gym or doing triathlons and Ironmans. Whatever it is, it's a mental and physical choice. Sleep, you have no control over this, right? When you fall asleep, your brain takes over and will give you what it can. So this is everything you're doing from the point of wake. This is your natural human approach to everything you're doing from the point of wake, is that when you do present yourself to sleep, whether it's midday, which is perfectly natural in our polyphasic human sleep-wake cycle history, whether it's early evening, late afternoon, whether it's nocturnal, knowing this process of this polyphasic approach, that when you get that inside of you, what you're now doing is, by using that 90-minute thing, is that you know and I know that when we talk about naps and breaks and controlled recovery periods or mindset or meditation, is if every roughly, I don't need a wristband going off every 90 minutes telling me that I've got to go and do this, right? Mm. Because we'll just won't. It's just this 8 o'clock, 9:30. You don't even have to think about the timings because they're just there. Mm. And somebody goes, do this now, and you just go, I'll see you at 5:30. Is that all right? Because I've got something else on. You're just always manipulating outside influences just to keep you rolling along with more rhythm and harmony. And the point is if you do something for 90 minutes and then you go out and, you know, walk around the streets for 15 minutes and come back. Well, when you walk out and you go and sit by the river and look at the trees and hear the river, it's very funny how really, really quickly, isn't it, as far as visualization into the brain, this is what's being processed. You suddenly think, life isn't that bad, really, is it? You know, when you're sitting on top of that mountain, when you're looking at that view. And this is about understanding with the mindfulness, the meditation, the visualization, the brain and how it works, is if every 90 minutes you're just taking a little distracted break and just even, you know, I've had posters put up in office spaces that somebody can just stand in front of and look at, and maybe they've got something in their ears, some sort of sound intervention, and they just look at that for 3 minutes, and suddenly they've just had that little moment for their brain and everything else that's great. And what I mean is those moments, they all add up to your 8 hours a day. In fact, your approach will give you more recovery, both mentally and physically, and sleep-wise, because you'll get a better quality from it because of how you're focusing it. All the other little things that you do already just become more defined in that process. And that means that your recovery levels will go up. So you'll actually be recovering far more than 8 hours a day.
I'm dealing with like anger issues at the moment. Like I get angry and frustrated and I'll raise my voice to my daughter and my wife sometimes, which is something I'm not proud of, right? And it all stems from me being, all right, two things. One, being raised by a guy who's like that anyway, and just seeing that as being reflective of how a man should be. Yeah. But more importantly, it's because I'm always knackered. And if I can get on top of this and I can be more refreshed more often, I'm going to be more with it and I will be able to catch myself in the moment before I open my gob and say something stupid.
Yeah.
It's only tiredness where my gap between response and stimulus is like, it's non-existent. It's when I'm tired. So I think this is like super important. And I think for me, the most important part of this is that 90-minute cycle between 4 and 6:30, because many people are programmed to think that if you're sleeping, you're playing hooky, right? It's like the Spanish, isn't it? They have like a little siesta in the afternoon and stuff. And in the UK, we fucking plow through it, don't we? Because you're a layabout if you're having a rest. So if you've got in a relationship like I am with Liza, where she's looking after Zia all the time, and she's probably knackered because she's looking after Liza, and I say, "Oh, I'm just come on for a kip for 90 minutes," you can imagine if you haven't sat down and done that together, that that could be very combustible, right?
No, it's really dangerous, and it doesn't work like that, because that becomes a bit sort of almost selfish, that you're more tired than she is and stuff like that. But together, what you're doing is actually saying, would you like a better me?
Yeah.
Yes, she would. Would I like a better you? Well, I'd like you to feel that you're with a better me, you know, however you want to put it. And do we want to break up? Do we want to do that? Do we just think what fun we could have at night, you know? Just think, I could actually probably earn more money, whether it's money orientated, but we could actually raise our joint income, because the articles that I try to write or finish off, you know, like we're doing at the moment, if I did those at 1 o'clock in the morning, Christ, they're going to be better. You know, there'll be no waffle in them. There'll be an opportunity. So I think, you know, if I did certain things around there, we would get better from it. Mm. And so it's not a cycle to get over tiredness. It's not a cycle to, it's a cycle to make you all better.
Mm. Let's tie this into alcohol a little bit then, Nick. We have two things that kind of go on in Strive, and we've had quite a lot of people who work in the sleep industry. I think you're probably the fourth person we've had on who's, you know, sleep is their kind of like their first.
There's other people in sleep other than me.
There are, but you're very different. You're very different. This is why I liked your book Sleep so much, because it was different. Most sleep specialists regurgitate the same stuff but put a slightly different edge on it. Yours was clean and fresh. I just put that out there. But there are two things that people say. One of them is, I need to drink alcohol to put me to sleep. That's one.
Yeah.
And the other one is, I can't sleep now, I've stopped drinking alcohol. Let's deal with the first one first. When people say, I need to drink alcohol to put myself to sleep, what's going on there?
Because alcohol is a soporific. A soporific is a sedative. So when, you know, and in a certain quantity, it tries to remove things about, you know, negative thoughts. It puts you in a sort of sedative state. It changes a lot of imbalance inside your body. So it can make you feel a little bit more elated because it's doing that, but it's also dehydrates. So it's basically a sedative as a drug. That's what alcohol is, if you want to keep it simple. You know, my knowledge of alcohol is not that great, because it's never been an issue for me. I don't really focus on it, but it's been a growing area for a lot, and in sport. But basically, for most people, is that they've got all the sort of anxieties and worries and thoughts and everything else going on in the head. And when they get to a certain point in the day, the only way to sort of suppress that is to use the alcohol to suppress it down. So they then start thinking about jokes and funny things and can feel a bit more relaxed. And then the extra bit of alcohol then puts them into a place where the brain puts them into a sleep state. But because you're sedated, right? It's a bit like a hard-hitting melatonin drug. You know, it's telling the brain to stop functioning, you know, to suppress, which is what melatonin does in the pineal gland in your brain. It puts you in a place where you can go to sleep, and it just shunts you down there. So it sort of shuts things down. So now the only thing you can do is, you don't fall asleep on excessive amounts of alcohol. You don't fall asleep after a glass of wine or a cold beer. It's that moving beyond that level where you've put so much in your system that literally your brain shuts you down. So you just crash. But during the sleep, because it's dehydrating the brain big time, that's what hangovers are all about, is it's dehydrating the brain big time, is that if you can imagine, if you're in a clinic and you're all wired up with sensors, as you watch somebody who's got a lot of alcohol in their system and they get crashed, they will get dumped into what's classed as like a deep sleep stage quite quickly. And they get held there for a bit, but then it knocks out because it can't be consistent. So they basically get stuck in light sleep stages. They're constantly waking up, but they're not conscious of it. So they're just flicking out of sleep all the time.
Mm.
And because they're massively hydrated, it tends to also create a neurosis afterwards. So the paranoia, the anxiety, and the depression, and all of those things tend to come back even more. And that just continues to go on. So we kind of use it, thinking it's going to help us to get sick. But all we're using is a drug to try and overcome everyday issues that continue to grow. And if you haven't got somewhere else to deal with it, that's what you do. So I don't think anybody uses alcohol to help them go to sleep. I think they use them to overcome other things.
Or they believe that it is helping them, but really long term it's not.
No.
Because they're not even aware that they're waking up. What about the people who have stopped? And I'm never quite sure how much of this is resistance, you know. So we use the term resistance. Nick stole it from Stephen Pressfield, the author. The little voice in your head that really wants you to drink when you don't want to drink, right?
Yeah, it's like smoking. There's these little things in there. Just says, come on.
Yeah. So I don't know how much of this is resistance, but you get a lot of people saying, "Ah, Lee, you know, I'd love to give up drinking, but I've tried it, but I can't sleep. You know, I need to go back." What is it about stopping drinking then that is affecting someone's sleep? Is it just anxiety?
I think you get to a particular point, we're all got no fear and we're all resilient and we can deal with everything and da-da-da-da-da. And whether it happens when you're a young teenager, which is common in these days, or when it happens later in life, is there these things are there. And if you haven't got a natural everyday process with partners, with friends, with your understanding, with a balanced approach to stuff to be able to deal with these things, then they just accumulate. And certainly whenever you go into any sort of counseling, you do realize that you haven't got things in place to protect yourself from these things. So they just keep coming along. So I think it is very much is that addressing the real thing. You know, if you don't know what it is, you need to ask and you need to go and find support, because they'll find it, because it is there. So I think all it is they sort of, by not addressing the thing, then they just say, well, it's okay to do it again, or it's okay just to have one. They already know that it's not going to be one a week. They know it's going to turn into one every night. Then it's going to be two every night. They know this already in their head, don't they? But they're kind of trying to make up some sort of excuse to go back there, because that's easier than actually maybe going along to a counselor and finding out that your mother, who treated you really shit throughout all your life, is still sat on your shoulder.
Yeah.
And she's been dead for 20 years, but she doesn't disappear,
mm-hmm.
you know? And there's all that sort of psychological stuff. But, you know, I think they, you know, part of the process with a lot of these things is eventually they raise the price of cigarettes to make it unachievable for most. They change the packaging to try and scare the living daylights out of anybody who bought a packet of cigarettes that, you know, this is what it does.
Mm.
Constantly talked about it, constantly came up with research. So I suppose, you know, when you say sort of touch on alcohol, you know, there's nothing, it's a social experience. People like to have a drink, glass of wine with a meal. You go around the world in cultures and their relationship with alcohol is different. They don't not drink, but they do it in a much controlled way. That if they have a piece of cheese, they have a little glass of wine, but they don't have a bottle. They don't have three of them, you know? So you do sort of can learn a lot of how you can have a healthy, balanced approach to everything. And we can't all live in a, you know, restricted environment. We want to be able to live our lives, But I think until you've got that point where you've got, you know, you've got that $4.99, $3.99 bottle of wine or that those cans of beer or that whatever, and actually on the can, it says guaranteed to make you have neurosis, depression, and want to take your life if you drink more than one can. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This will kill you. I think until that becomes, you know, like smoking is taking a long time to get to a pub. It's just easy just to have a beer with your husband because he goes down the pub, and why can't I have a beer with him or a little, you know, vodka tonic.
It's a huge challenge. It's a huge challenge. I know we've reached the top of the hour. Do you have any more time, or have you got to shoot off?
I've got 5 minutes.
5 minutes. Let's talk about light exposure and Wi-Fi then quickly, because I went to a wellness event in Cardiff the other day, and my wife is a great believer that Wi-Fi and 5G and all that kind of stuff is frying our brain. I fry my wife's brain by just saying I don't have time to think about that kind of stuff. But she bought me glasses to use on my computer. She right. got me a wristband and a necklace for Wi-Fi and stuff. She keeps telling me my phone's too bright and my computer screen's too bright. And then you reply back to me in the question and tell me to sort me light stuff out. So talk a little bit about how light exposure and artificial light is affecting our sleep.
The it's not difficult to look into it. Just tap it in a browser, blue light, daylight relationship with human beings, and you'll very, very quickly get some good examples and a bit more understanding about light. And the quicker thing is that as human beings, brain and bodily functions, we have not changed that much. The sun goes around our planet exactly the way. So there are two hormones that are produced. One is serotonin. So when we're exposed to daylight, and particularly blue light, which is the high energy light wave within the red, orange, yellow, green spectrum of light, is that enters our pineal gland, right, through our eyelids, and triggers serotonin to be made, which is a hormone that tells the brain to unsuppress everything and become active. It's about mood, it's about motivation, about appetite, it's about everything, right? And then during the course of every day, again, if you just tap it in, when the sun rises, the daylight outside could, seasonally dependent, be up at 100,000 lux, right? 100,000 lux. Now, lux is simply the parameter of measuring light, which is lumens per square meter. So all it's not measuring blue light, red light. It's just measuring that is the amount of light being exposed to you, right? And it could be 100,000 lux. That would be a midday period. So from the point in the morning, you would have been exposed, being outside as a human being, to 60, 70, 100,000 lux, slightly changing when it's really dense, cloudy days. Things like that, but principally that's where it is. We get to midday, and then from midday, as it continues around the planet, that light level would start to diminish, 60, 70, down to 40, down to 30, and then basically down to zero, okay? Then you'd be in diminished light, which would effectively be you round the fire, right? So amber light, starlight, red light, yellow light, do not affect this process. So you can still be active, having an evening meal around the fire, under the stars, but those lights. So once that level of light drops to a certain point, which is called diminished light, heading towards sunset, you start producing melatonin in the same pineal gland. So it takes over the serotonin, it calls itself melatonin, and it tells the brain to suppress everything. Mm-hmm. So the brain starts to shut things down, and it's moving you to a point where the next stage is actually going into sleep, the onset of sleep. It doesn't put you to sleep. It just takes you to that place. So if there's things going on like alcohol, stuff, working pattern, you know, then you can override it.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. So what you do is when we started inventing artificial light, so I can see you in your room right now, all we try and do and say, there's a lot of information there about light. Your wife's telling you about shut your tech down, blue light's dangerous. The amount of blue light coming off your tech, right, is tiny. It's almost non-existent.
Right.
The amount of blue light, if you stepped outside right now, is like 100,000 times stronger.
Right.
Right. The difference is that you are staring at a small area for long periods of time that is emitting blue light, and that has more of a health consequence, not just about falling asleep at night, because the blue light is creating serotonin, so you can't melatoninize yourself. That's why people say shut your tech down with the blue light. But you can get diffusers on your tech. Even if you just sit back by a couple of millimeters, it's gone, you know?
Mm.
And what it is about having a better relationship with the exposure to light. It's because we spend too much time looking at something that does emit blue light, but it's in a concentrated place. So what happens, our eyeballs can swell. There's lots of things about vision impairment, all sorts of stuff starts to have an effect because we're very much focused in a small area for a long period of time. And even with the diffusers and everything else, it's a bit like that. So it's more about staring at screens. So that's why every 90 minutes you get up and go and, you know, do something else quickly to just create those barriers, to create the amount of time you're staring in this place, because it's a lot more intensive than that. Mm. But I also think that I asked you to download a little free app called a Lux Light Meter off the App Store. And it's simply, you know, what I start doing is sort of like, okay, shut your tech down. The kids won't get to sleep, yada, yada, yada. But you actually had a conversation with them about light yet, right? You've got that one. I've got that one.
Right, right.
Right. Now on there, it says 71, whatever it is. What's it saying on there?
Yours again? Says 151 lux. And mine,
151.
Mine's,
I'm just going back a bit. What's it doing now?
191.
What? So all I do is, it's not sort of science because you can get lots of, but what it is you just try and get a relationship.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah.
If you go by the window, is that a window to your left?
Can't. Oh, wow. It boosted, went right up to the thousands.
Right. So principally, the average seasonal average is around 10,000 lux outside while the sun's up and going down, you know, because it changes throughout the day. And also because you would have been moving around outside. So you go under trees, shadows, and things like that. So you're not always exposed to this 100,000 thing, right?
Yeah.
So when you start to look at it, is that you do need a sort of 10,000 lux level of light to start your day, right? Your post sleep between 8 and 9:30, right? So for you to be able to wake nice and naturally at 8 o'clock, the sun would do it.
Mm. Right?
But that's probably come up at, you know, 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock. So we've got curtains and blinds. So you would find it very difficult. You would have woken up with me outside. I'm an AM, you're a PM. So I wake with the sunrise, producing serotonin like mad, because you're 2 hours phase BA genetically than me.
Yeah.
And you wake at 8. So I wake at 6:30, get up, do the breakfast, cook the fire, da 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 da. And then you naturally wake at 8 because the natural daylight has not serotonin you as quickly as I have.
Mm.
Right. But you need light. So because we're outside, you're getting it. But inside, you wander around your house with that light meter. Most artificial lights, even the really strong ones inside gyms, CrossFit units, offices, when you just tap it in, most of those artificial lights are designed to emit the right level of light for you to be able to move around that building as a human. And most of them are 100 lux, 200 lux, 300 lux at best. Right? So all these big offices and your home where you are now, you just wander around your room and it looks quite light and bright.
It's like 300.
There. And you drop it down towards the floor a little bit.
Yeah. It's, ooh, 60.
60, right? So what you do is, as you're wandering around your environment, which includes outside and inside, what you want to understand is that you would naturally have around 12 hours of light, 4 hours of diminished light, yeah, which is where you're sitting now. That's diminished. And 8 hours in some sort of darkness. That's your 24-hour thing. When you move into October and into the winter months, that changes to 8 day. That you shift. So you can have 16 hours of daylight in the summer and just 8 in the winter. That's that SAD shift.
Mm.
Whereas if it was without daylight saving time, you'd have around 12 hours of light today, 4 hours diminished and 8 hours dark. So what you're looking at is that during the course of your day, you need to be exposed to this light. And I kind of think about, in every 90 minutes, think 10 or 15 minutes, right? So when you leave the coffee shop to go for a little walk outside,
yeah,
you're getting a light hit while you're out there, right?
Yeah.
In the morning, if it's in the winter and it's dark outside, you need to bring a device into your world that helps you. Because if that light's not there, because it's shifted from the summer in the morning, when you go to work, you're getting exposed to it. So I sort of think that what you should be thinking about all the time throughout your day and throughout the seasons is, I want to make sure that I'm getting hits of this sort of 10,000 lux through a little lamp, through a little device, or getting outside when I can, because that is critical to when I get into the winter. And you know, I put it on the, so the reason why you get the glasses is I put a little company called Swanwick, Swanwick's, who I work with. So you've not only got glasses that protect you while you're working on your thing so you don't overexpose yourself, right? There's also, you know, in the summer, sometimes you don't want to overexpose yourself because there's so much of it. So sometimes you want to sort of get into a place of not. So it's really sunny outside. The curtains are not protecting it. Everybody's playing, but you're in diminished light land.
Yeah, because your glasses.
Yeah, or it's the lighting in your house, right?
Hmm.
If you just make sure that it's all nice, you know, candlelight's great, red light's brilliant. That can be very effective. So some of the things that you use, and you don't use them just because they're faddy technique, but seasonal affective disorder is real. So if you want to wake naturally in the morning, you've got your curtains and your blinds shut, and you're trying to protect yourself from the seasonal changes. If you do use blackout blinds and curtains, you've got to have what's called a dawn wake simulator in your bedroom. And that is what brings the outside light into your bedroom, creates the serotonin and wakes you naturally, whether it's dark outside or light, right?
Right.
That's called a little dawn wake simulator. So I gave you a link to a nice company called Lumi, where you can see these products. They're real. They're real. Yeah. They're not made up. They're real. And there's little ones called bed bugs for the kids. So when you put a light in your kid's room, it's actually doing the circadian process, and they just think it's a light.
Yeah.
But it's actually doing. So it's a good place to just have a wander around. But that, and something in the kitchen, you know, you get up, have a shower. So you've been woken up by daylight. You know, I'm an AMer, so I don't shut the curtains, right? The sun can wake me up at 5. I don't care. You know, if it goes to 4:30, which it does mid-June, I shut the curtains because that's too early.
Yeah.
But as long as the sun rises, 5:30 onwards, my curtains never shut. Because I just let it in, fills me with serotonin, I'm off doing my stuff and starving, right? So you have to think about how you create that start to your day, right?
Yeah.
And you have to balance. But even when you get to the kitchen, there's a little lamp in the corner, right? And you just switch it on and you just get 10 minutes because you're not watching these things all day. You're not under that level of light all day. It's just there while you're cooking the kettle, making a piece of toast, making some breakfast for your kid, right? It's just there, even with all the other lights on, because it just raises it, okay? And if it was there by your desk every 90 minutes, or even if you're up in Starbucks, even on the desk, is it Starbucks and all other famous coffee houses? You would just have it there. And, you know, throughout your day, you just switch it on.
Ask myself.
And just for 10 minutes. Or, you know, when you get really funky in sport, because I've given you a link to this, is here's my little human charger.
Oh, wow.
So, developed by geeks in Finland, right? Scientists. You still hear me?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Can you still hear me, Lee?
Yeah, I can.
Right? So, all they've done is put what comes in these daylight saving lamps, which is just 10,000 lux. Yeah?
Yeah.
And use the ear canal to hit the light receptors, yeah, to trigger serotonin being topped up in my pineal gland, which is mood, motivation, everything else. So even in a completely non-intrusive way, around my home and my office, maybe I just have a little lamp, and in the bedroom, whatever, is because I just need that level of light to get me going, bodily functions, appetite, mood, motivation. Before I get my day really cracking on, I've got to get my brain lit up and fully functioning. So if I can use it outside, great. If not, I must have something inside, because the level of light in your house is barely on average 200 or 300 lux wherever you go.
Yeah.
And that's just really low level stuff. In Starbucks, check it tomorrow.
It'll be low. I'll check it, but it'll be low.
It'll be low. Yeah. You know, and you'll see if you sat there by the window in Starbucks, at least it's higher than if you sit there. So all of those little things, and that's why the breaks are so important. But that
looks fabulous.
It's a bit of an investment. You know, it's not the crazy, you know, it's like a good pair of trainers, right? Mm. But what it is you can just put that in your pocket, you hit it, and you just get 15 minutes. It won't do it for any longer, right? So you could ride to work. You could walk to Starbucks. And nobody's going to look at you and go, oh, you know, Lee's got his lamp with him.
Yeah. If anyone's listening to this and they're not watching a video, Nick's just put a pair of earbuds in his ear that are effectively lamps. So he's got lamps in his ear, but they look like earphones.
Yeah.
I love them. I'm going to check them out.
But it, you know, some things come along and you just say, these sort of things is you have to be careful, but, you know, and particularly the other area which you're looking at, which is travel.
Mm.
One of the things about light therapy is it's not about this is light therapy. It's about our relationship of under and overexposure to our natural everyday process that we really need to keep us in the right mood. So we, you know, anger management, everything else, it all comes from this decision making. All this sort of comes from is because we're completely desynchronized with a process that has not changed. And it's not just something about, oh, it's the sunrise and sunset. This is not your brain and all your bodily functions. You've got clocks in every single cell of your body, clocks in every organ of your body. You've got a main clock in your hypothalamus, and you've got a sun going around our planet. Now, if you get so desynchronized from that process and you are spending most days in nothing more than 300 or 400 lux or less at the wrong times and the wrong places, you know, so I know it's going to be like 100,000 lux tomorrow outside midday. Mm. It's not rocket science. It's the sun going around our planet. We all know it, don't we? Now, that's when I put these in my ears and go, well, I need a bit of that.
Yeah.
But I'm stuck in my office. Or I'm, you know, everybody's got different, I might be doing night shifts, you know, and I want to keep that balance. And these are all the little things. So sometimes, and particularly one of the main benefits we use this for is shifting through time zones and jet lag, right? So you can actually use it to reset where your clock is, where your functions are when you shift through time zones, you know, east and west.
And I do that a lot.
You do that a lot, right?
Because I travel to America. I live in America 6 months of the year. I'm always traveling around Asia. So I think I might have to get myself some.
If you know, you've probably used all sorts of jet lag and travel things, the food clock, going on this time, not doing this. And
no, I don't actually. I just suffer
it. Jump on and go.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, it's almost like, you know, it's 20 past five in the UK. It's June, it's July, and it's still very light outside and will be for some time.
Mm.
But I'm going to LA. Now, in LA, it ain't like that. Now, right? Yeah. So what you can do is you can diminish your light and you can also increase your light. So when your normal clock thinks it's sort of like dark time, but it's light time in LA, you just shove those in your ears and adjust your clock.
Mm.
You know? So there's a lot of benefits, but I think for anybody listening, it's a big thing at this moment in time. And there's a lot about breathing, which is very good to deal with a lot of things. But I think the real balance about, we've got a lot of addictive behavior in sport, big time. And people can access things so easily online these days.
Yeah.
You know, I've got people downloading melatonin and stuff like that and all sorts of things and addictive stuff. So I think it's just a really nice place to sort of try and realize that when those thoughts come along is, you know, if you look at the river and the trees and the plants, then maybe that'll just put it in perspective a little bit better. And I know that's a bit, you know, okay, Nick says, look at the trees and the plants are going to sit by the river. But we know what these things are, don't we? You know, yeah. We try to find these little things that just go, hang on a minute. How can we put that in context? But, you know, I think you've got some good stuff in your profile and you're not unusual in the slightest. There's one or two things in there that, you know, you're addressing, which is good. There's some things that are obviously impacting on, you know, where you live and you're traveling and that sort of thing. And those dynamics, which won't go away. So hopefully this approach will put it in more context for you. And I think the real one for you, being a PM and an AM as well, with your child, with all those other things on, I think if you got, rather than listening to your wife, you say, shut this down. She's getting the right approach and she's certainly got you in the right way. But it's just having a little better redefined approach about your exposure to light every day, which will really help with all of those things that you have on your profile that are the personal, you know, challenges for you. I think that approach, because you've already got these nice little breaks, you've already got some things going on. And I would pretty much say is if you did sit down with your family and have that little chat, maybe got yourself a human charger, maybe got some light you can take to Starbucks, maybe, you know, really look at that cycle in the afternoon is about saving, making everybody better. It's not about overcoming fatigue. I think you'd be more productive. I think you'd be more happier. I think you'll raise your income. I think you'll start to do other things. And the only reason I can say all that is because I've seen it before.
Mm. Nick, kept you far longer than I should have. I've really loved our chat. Thank you for coming on.
I enjoy your hourly rate. It's amazing. You know, more than anybody else in the world. So I'm only keeping this going because it just earns me more money, Lewis.
Hey, you just got me another load of guests. Thank you for that, Nick. All right, Nick, I'll be in touch. I will make sure that all the links you shared with me, I'll stick them out there and make sure everybody knows how to get hold of you, all right?
No problem at all, Lee.
You're a top man. Take care, Nick.
And you. Bye now.
Okay, what next? So if you've listened to this outro before, stop. You don't have to listen to it again. It's going to be a couple of minutes that will waste your life, I guess. But if you haven't listened to this outro before, then please do spend the next couple of minutes listening to it. Don't fast forward me to Tim Ferriss or Sam Harris or someone else, right? What next? You listen to the Alcohol Addiction Podcast. You're learning quite a lot about the truth about alcohol's philosophy, about Stry's philosophy, about how my mind works and how I became someone that doesn't drink alcohol, right? And podcasts will help. They'll help to increase the cognitive dissonance in your mind, right? And not that, what I mean by that is you will start to be questioning whether or not you should be drinking alcohol or not. And that is brilliant. That's great. But the podcast, as essential as they are, will only give you so much. They will only scratch the surface of what your capabilities are or the work that you need to do in order to be someone that doesn't drink alcohol, okay? When I became someone that doesn't drink alcohol in 2009, I quickly set about trying to find the best way of teaching people my experience. Because if you think about it, I had become someone who doesn't drink alcohol very quickly, but then how do you teach people that, okay? It's taken me 10 years, and I'm going to keep getting better and better at it, at cultivating and writing down and expressing my formula, if you like, in what you will see as Strive, okay? And Strive is a family. It's a network of people that have transcended the online realm and are now meeting live and face-to-face, right? Strive is a home where you can feel safe in your vulnerability, knowing that your peers have experienced the same harrowing experiences that you're going through, that the judgment and the shame and the guilt that is poured on you by people who don't understand you doesn't exist, because everybody that you're talking to knows what you're talking about. And I'm talking about building friendships and relationships where you confide in them more than you confide in the person you're married to, or your mum, or your dad, or your kids, or your brothers, or your sisters, or your bestest friends. The depth of conversation and where we go on Strive in the short amount of time is amazing. And it is creating some really strong and some beautiful relationships. In addition to that core support unit, because as I'll always say, we drank alone, we certainly shouldn't try to quit alone. You know, we need that support framework. Aligned to that support framework is our weekly online meetings. So we meet up in Australia, we meet up in North America, we meet up in Europe, and we meet up online and we have a good laugh and we, you know, we seek support if we need it, or we just talk about our day, but we're talking in a safe environment, right? And we're also starting to branch out and meet each other live. We haven't set up any major live events yet. But, you know, only in the last couple of months, I've been to Las Vegas to meet Holly. We had a dinner in Birmingham where six or seven Strivers got together. I know in Australia, Kim and Glynis got together. Stella's been flying around the world, seeing, like, Nikki in New Zealand. And she's been to America and seen Lisa. So that is happening as well, which is super important. We also have over 130 coaching videos, the taster, the intensive, all designed to help you become someone that doesn't drink alcohol whilst being supported by your peer group. But most importantly, a small select band of ambassadors who used to be people who had problems with alcohol, who were kind of stifled and stuck in the quicksand of alcoholism, who came through this process and are now ambassadors, right? They are now helping other people like you to get through these things. And we're going to keep growing. We are going to invite specialists in to help you with your counseling, to help you with your trauma, to help teach you cognitive behavioral therapy techniques. We're going to get people in creating training courses. We're going to have collaborations with other companies. For example, we have a collaboration with Sam Harris and the Waking Up app. So you can, if you join Strive, you get a free 30-day membership of the Waking Up meditations, and money off is lifetime deal. We've got relationship with Nick Littlehales, the sleeping coach, where you can get money off his products to help you sleep better, which is always an issue when you become someone who doesn't drink alcohol. So Strive is growing and growing and growing. It's a monthly subscription. You can quit whenever you like. It costs £40. The way that I measure that up is when I was drinking on a Friday, I would go to the off license and I would buy three bottles of wine for a tenner, right? So if I do that in a month, there you are. I've got myself £40 if I just stop buying those three bottles of wine for a tenner. But if you're anything like me, you're actually spending, between £100 and £200 a weekend on alcohol. If you become someone that doesn't drink alcohol, you're going to be saving thousands a year. We're talking about £40 a month. Also, if you find that you're saying to yourself, I don't want to pay £40 a month, it's too much, then you really have to reconsider the priority of being someone who doesn't drink alcohol. Maybe this isn't the right time for you. Because if you want to be someone who doesn't drink alcohol, if you're really serious about it, £40 a month shouldn't be scaring you off, right? And it's important that I say that. I always remember when I joined the Jack Canfield Success Principles coaching course back in 2009. I was £30,000 in debt, and I rung this helpline, and a woman on the other line wanted me to pay something like £2,500 to £3,000, and I didn't have the money. And she said to me, if you can't find the money, £3,000 to change your life, maybe this isn't for you. And I was like, fucking hell, she's right. So I put another £3,000 on top of the £30,000 I had on my credit card. I had £33,000 in debt. And I can tell you within the 12 months, I'd paid all that off. So look at this as an investment. This isn't a doodad, as Robert Kiyosaki says, over Rich Dad, Poor Dad. This is an investment. It is an investment in your education. Because when you become someone that doesn't drink alcohol, Strive isn't about helping you to reach that goal. It's not about helping you to be someone who doesn't drink alcohol. When we become people that doesn't drink alcohol, our biggest challenge is reasserting ourselves back into society. Our biggest challenge is filling our white space with meaning and purpose. Our biggest challenge is finding fulfillment in our relationships and our life. That is what Strive's about. And if you are interested in those things, if you're interested about filling the white space, meaning and purpose, living a wonderful life and achieving your dreams instead of just talking about them, then you need to be in something like this long term. You know, we interviewed James and Janice Prochaska, and they were saying, weren't they, that the maintenance phase that you go through when you're going through recovering from addiction takes anywhere up to 5 years. Please don't take the taste or the intensive or join for a month, stop drinking and think you've nailed it. Hang around for a long time, cultivate these relationships, and most importantly, have a lot of fun. If you're interested in joining Strive, then go to www.thetruthaboutalcohol.co.uk and you can sign up there. Alternatively, you can email me at truthaboutalcohol@gmail.com and I'll answer any questions that you've got. Until then, take care. Thank you, as always, for listening to the Alcohol Addiction Podcast. And if you want to watch the Alcohol Addiction Podcast, then Google Lee Davey YouTube and you'll find all the videos for all of our interviews up on the site. Thanks for listening.